This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Hawke's Bay, a community access media station. Thank you to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Tell me, who wrote the book of love? I've got to know the answer.
You listen to Radio Hawke's Bay. This is a program called
The Wonderful World of Waldini Books.
It's my pleasure, as always, to have in the studio the wonderful Lou from Waldini Books in Havelock North. How you been?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Ticking along nicely towards the silly season.
I love it.
Do you know I love
the
it.
Hustle, the bustle, the noise, and
yep.
Pushing and the shoving and the crowds.
Do you? I'm not sure about that part, but I do like the sparkly bits and the Christmas trees and the prezzies and the family, you know, just
and
having
I love
your
the
people
Snoopy's
around
Christmas
you.
On the radio and all that sort of stuff. It just gets you in the mood, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
So when do you put your tree up? Have you got it up already?
Yeah, it went up the other day.
Did it?
That was my son does it, and he always does it. He doesn't live at home, but he's the one that just does it, and it's a surprise.
Oh.
You know, so he'll just arrive at some point when he knows we're not there, and just.
Oh, I love it.
The decorations will be done.
What a great idea.
It's just wonderful. And you come and you go, oh my God.
And do you love
it? It's Christmas. I love it. Absolutely love it. Yeah.
And today's our books have got a bit of a Christmas theme. Well, certainly the first one does. It's called The Christmas Waiata.
A Christmas Waiata. It's by Shelley Byrne Field, who is a wonderful poet and short story writer. I think she's got a book coming out for children next year as well. But this is one that she's produced herself. And it's basically a retelling of Dickens's A Christmas Carol.
Oh, right.
But it's putting an interesting twist on it. And it's one of those books that I think will be for children, probably. I think you'd probably have to be 8 or 9 to get the nuances of it.
Yes.
And then just a bloody good yarn for the rest of us. So after 30 years of schmoozing to keep her tukuhanga reo afloat, Auntie Rangi is over it. So she's our Scrooge, okay, Auntie Rangi. And her accountant, who has just died, Anglo, who she's worked with for many a year, is the sort of Marley character. So he's just died and they've been money-grabbing and mean and penny-pinching for absolute years, and he was her role model. She's not that bothered that he's dead because her heart has died along with all the... She's got a heart of stone. She's got this wonderful niece, Taylor, who works at the Kohangareo. She's got little George, who is one of the little tots that goes to the Kohanga, and he's always trying to give her a little flower and a hongi, and she just rushes away from him because he's got sticky fingers and a snotty nose. And his mother is struggling to make ends meet. So you've got all the elements of A Christmas Carol in there. And then the ghosts come into it too. So you've got the ghost of Christmas past, and then you've got the ghost of Christmas present, who is basically Billy James.
Yeah, Billy T. James.
Yeah, Billy T. James, with his singlet and his stubbies and the whole thing going on. Yeah, and speaks like that too. And then you've got the ghost of Christmas future, who is absolutely terrifying. And these three ghosts show Auntie Rangi the error of her ways. Like she used to, so we go back in time and we do see, this is kind of spoilers because it happens towards the end of the book as well, in the middle of the book, but we do see her as a young woman who's a clever woman, and she's working at the freezing works. And we see her earlier than that when she's at school, and she and her little boyfriend, her little friend Tama, are conversing in te reo Māori, but they are heard and they are punished.
Mm.
So you've got all these wonderful little elements of story that are the Christmas Carol story, but that also serve to explain certain things like how did Auntie Rangi get like this? There's a reason Anglo is called Anglo. So it is it's an allegory for colonisation as well. So I think what Shelley's done is something incredibly clever and incredibly beautiful. And by the end of it, we do have the happy Christmas, because you're going to ask me,
Is it
does it have a happy ending? Is it going to be uplifting? And it really is. And the way that Shelley writes, because she's won several prizes for her writing, she injects a great deal of beauty in it. So this has got lots of humour and it's got beautiful bits in too. And I wanted to put bookmarks in the gorgeous bits, but I was too immersed in the story, so I'm not going to be able to find them for you now. So this came into our shop yesterday, so I've read it really quickly. But she's funny and she's quite a poetic writer. So here's a bit. So Billy's waved his jandal. He's got a glittery jandal, and he waves it over Auntie Rangi's head. Suddenly her nostrils sucked in the sweet odours of watermelon, strawberries, taro, pork bones, fried bread and golden syrup, and her eyes slurped up the rainbow splashes of balloons, slushies, flags, ribbons and tie-dye t-shirts. So this is like a Kiwi Christmas.
Yes.
Yeah, and she remembers. And it's just quite gorgeous. And there's lots of sprinklings of Te Reo Māori written through. Māori first, and then if Shelley feels that it needs translating, then she'll put it into English. But a lot of it we get because it's everyday language.
Yeah. So the modernisation of a classic, when you read the book, were you thinking of the classic as well, interpretation of it, or is this just a completely new interpretation?
Yeah, I don't think you have to. Right. I suppose, like, you know, if you've got the background that I've got, then I know what she's doing.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to link it. But I mean, it's probably easier to read it if you don't try and link it.
Yeah, I bet it does.
Yeah.
I wonder, do those classics, do they sell well? I mean, I would probably prefer to read an updated version.
Yeah.
Because I find a lot of those really old books like Agatha Christie, they were great in their day, but they're hard to read now.
The language has moved on, hasn't it? So it depends. Which I think once you get into it, like Dickens particularly, just, you know, the first social justice campaigner in literature probably. Mm. No, probably wasn't. That would be Shakespeare or someone before that. But you know what I mean? Where was I going with that? I don't know. Classics. Yeah, but once you get into the language of the day, then you roll with it, don't you?
You
so you can still read Dickens, and you probably should.
So what do you give it out of 10?
10 out of 10. I think this is a really interesting thing to have done. It's an important thing to have done. You know, when we're looking for Māori stories by Māori authors, this is a perfect example of that.
Beautiful. Mm. All right, and our next book is called Water.
Water by John Boyne.
It's got a cold-looking cover. It's a cold-looking cover.
Cold cover.
Yes, cold cover.
John Boyne, author of The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, just for context, and many, many other books, but The Poor Bloke's known best for that one because they made a film out of it and raddy, raddy, rao. So John Boyne is one of those writers that has amazing facility with language, and every book of his that you read is not going to be the same. So you can read The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas and you can read this one, Water, and you wouldn't know that the same person had written it. So what he's intending to do with this, it's going to be a quintet of the four elements. So water first, and then there'll be, I don't know in what order, but fire, air and earth.
Yeah.
So in this one, he does go back to some familiar themes when we're talking about Ireland. So in this case, there is a woman who's lived a very privileged life in Dublin. She had two daughters. We know quite early on in the piece that one of them is dead, and that something's happened with the family, and that the father is, her husband is disgraced, and that she has basically run away because she cannot face what's going on, and perhaps her own part in it. So she's run away to this island, and my Irish geography is not brilliant, but if you've got Galway on the coast, it's an island off the coast of Galway, and there are about 400 people on it, and it's got an old pub and a new pub. And of course, the new pub, is still about 200 years old. You know? Yeah.
New old pub.
But yeah, exactly. And there's a lovely priest who doesn't push himself on the newcomer. So the wife, her name is Willow Hale. But first, she was Vanessa Carvin. And she'd been that way for 28 years. She was Vanessa Hale for 24 years before that. Now she's become Willow Hale, a step further from the woman I once was, she says. So she's gone back to her middle name and her maiden name because she doesn't want people to know who she is. So we know that something's happened and that she and her family have been in the media. So she holes up in this stone cottage on this windblown island in the middle of nowhere where everyone knows she's the new woman and are all gossiping about her. And it's her looking deep into her soul to see how culpable she is in her husband's downfall. And it's told with a great deal of minute observation. So there are some characters in there that are almost like caricatures, like the old grumpy Irish woman.
Yes.
She's in it and she's hilarious. There is a cat that just arrives uninvited. There are other people on the island with whom Willow comes into contact, and then contact with her younger daughter sometimes.
It sounds like a particularly depressing read.
It's not, though. Yeah, interestingly. You know, I talked about that song, that book, Prophet song, that was in Dublin. That won the Booker Prize. And that was a depressing book, but it won the Booker Prize because it was prophetic and beautifully written. So this one, I wouldn't say is depressing, because she's really finding hope and finding a future when some terrible things have happened.
Did she leave the past behind, or did she come to terms with it and accept it for what it was and move on?
That would be a spoiler.
Oh, would it?
Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you off air.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's done it again, basically. He's such a beautiful writer, and it's quite interesting for a man to write intimately from a woman's point of view.
Do men do that successfully?
Some men do. Like, I think we've had books in book club before, and if someone's just read it, they've found out it might be an ambiguous name of the author, and they'd have looked that author up and they've gone, oh my God, it was a man. And you wouldn't have picked that it was a man writing a woman. So it can be done.
Yes.
John Boyne can do it. There'd be things in there that I would go, I'm not sure if a woman would do that. But the thing is, people do all sorts of things,
of
and I'll defend anybody's right to write something that happens, because people do all sorts of weird stuff, don't they?
It's a funny old world, isn't it?
It's a funny old world.
Nothing surprises me anymore.
No. Anyway. There we go, those old jaded types.
Well, any of these awesome books, where do we get them?
Wardini books.
Of course.